Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining the Get Informed Legal Protections in the Workplace conference call. Ms. Christina Forster, you may now begin.
Thank you, Claire. Good evening, everybody. As Claire mentioned, my name is Christina Forster, and I'm the Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter of the National MS Society. Welcome, everybody, to our second call tonight in our 2012 Employment Teleconference Series, Get Informed Legal Protections in the Workplace. The New York City Southern New York Chapter would like to thank the Peter J. Sharp Foundation for their sponsorship of this program. Joining me as host on the call this evening is Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and Barbara McKeon, Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter. Please note that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series if you are interested. This evening's call is an exciting one. Whether hearing it for the first time or as a refresher, we will learn about key employment laws such as the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Family Medical Leave Act and how they can be used to make informed decisions about employment. If you are currently concerned about your job performance and wondering if it is time to tell your employer about your MS and request accommodations, this call should help you understand the law more. After our speaker has completed his presentation, there will be time for your questions. We ask that if you do have questions, please feel free to jot them down during the call so you are prepared to ask them during our Q&A period. Be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line after your question is asked. This will allow us to get to as many questions as possible. We will do our best to get to all the questions, but as time runs out, Barbara, Steve, and I will give you our contact information so you can ask us your questions, and we will do our best to get the answer for you. At the conclusion of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions. If possible, please stay on the line until the conclusion of the program and answer the questions. We are really interested in receiving your feedback. Our speaker for tonight's call is a consultant for the Job Accommodation Network, or in a short form called JAN. Briefly, I'll explain what JAN is, and then I'll introduce our speaker to you. JAN is the leading source of free, expert, and confidential guidance on workplace accommodations and disability employment issues. Working toward practical solutions that benefit both employer and employee, JAN helps people with disabilities enhance their employability and shows employers how to capitalize on the value and talent that people with disabilities add to the workplace. Our presenter is Eddie Wyden, Senior Consultant for Job Accommodation Network. Originally from Central Florida, Eddie has lived in West Virginia for over 30 years now and has been a JAN consultant since 1993. He has a BA in English from the University of South Florida in Tampa and earned an MA in Behavioral Disorders from West Virginia University in Morgantown. Eddie specializes in upper body, lower body, and full body conditions such as finger, hand, arm, knee, shoulder, feet, and legs, as well as full body conditions such as multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, and spinal cord injuries. He is a member of JAN's motor team. Eddie enjoys searching for hard-to-find products as well as thinking up solutions for problematic functional job limitations. He likes to engage in problem-solving sessions with fellow consultants and with JAN callers. He is a regular contributor to JAN's e-newsletter articles. And with that, Eddie, I will turn the floor over to you. Welcome to tonight's call.
Thank you, Christina. Good evening, everyone. We're going to talk tonight, of course, about on the job with multiple sclerosis, with a special emphasis on the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Family Medical Leave Act. And I am going to talk a little bit about the Amendments Act that was added in early 2009. We refer to that as the Americans with Disabilities Act Amendment Act, ADAAA. It became effective in January of 2009, and it's actually caused some stirs because people have misunderstood what it meant. We get a lot of calls where people are wondering, did the Amendments Act change the entire ADA? Did it change reasonable accommodations? Those kinds of things, and the answer is no. The only thing that actually changed was the definition of disability. And it's the same as the old definition, only it's been expanded. So now there are going to be more people who will be covered by the ADA who may not have been covered in the past. So in order to be a person with a disability under the ADA, you have to have a physical or mental impairment which substantially limits one or more major life activities. Substantially limits really refers to the general population. Major life activities are things like seeing, hearing, speaking, breathing, performing manual tasks, lifting, walking, climbing, interacting with others, those kinds of major life activities. So if the individual has a condition that is long-term or permanent and has a substantial limitation in at least one major life activity, you're very likely to be covered by the ADA. It also includes that someone who has a record of an impairment can be a person with a disability, too, and can be covered under the ADA, even if they no longer have the disability. Because there have been people who have been discriminated against because of some old record in the past that showed that they had some medical condition. And maybe they outgrew it or improved or somehow cured. And if people are discriminated against because they have a record of an impairment, then they fall under the ADA, too. And also regarded as is also something that falls under the ADA, where the employer treats someone as if they have an impairment when maybe they don't. And I see this a lot when an employee comes back to work, having been off on leave, and they come back with a doctor's statement saying they can return to full duty, no limitations or restrictions, but the employer stands in the way of them returning. This would be a clear-cut example of regarded as, because the employer is making some kind of an employment decision, mainly you can't come back, because they have this idea that the person is disabled, even though the doctor has cleared them. So this can be an issue as well. But basically, if you have a physical or mental impairment, it substantially limits one or more major life activities, you're very likely to fall under the Americans with Disabilities Act. As I said, the new Amendments Act has broadened the definition of disability. So now what we're telling people is not to spend too much time analyzing whether someone actually is covered or not under the Americans with Disabilities Act, but instead focus on the accommodation. Is the accommodation that's been requested really needed? And can the employer provide the accommodation without incurring an undue hardship? The ADA applies to employers who have 15 or more employees. So if a company has less than 15 employees, they're not going to have obligations under the ADA. They're considered to be too small to be able to accommodate their employees. ADA is basically about accommodations, which I'm going to get into in some detail later. But it's basically about accommodations, at least the part of the ADA that we specialize in, which is Title I of the ADA, which is employment provisions. Title II involves state and local governments. Title III, public accommodations, theaters, restaurants, doctor's offices, shopping malls, those kinds of things. We primarily deal with employment issues, so we're mostly talking with employers and employees. Now, there's another really good federal law that can help people with disabilities, and it's my own experience that many employees who have MS do use the law. It's called FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. And it requires private employers with 50 or more employees and public agencies, including state, local, and federal government employers, regardless of the number of employees, to provide covered employees with up to 12 work weeks of unpaid job-protected leave a year. It also requires these employers to maintain group health benefits during the leave as if the employees were continuing to work instead of taking leave. To be covered by the Family Medical Leave Act, an employee must, one, have been employed by the employer for at least 12 months, two, have been employed for at least 1,250 hours of service during that 12-month period immediately preceding the commencement of the leave, and three, be employed at a work site where 50 or more employees are employed by the employer within 75 miles of that work site. So basically, if your company has 50 or more employees and you need to take time off for your own disability or to take care of a family member who has a disability, you can use the Family Medical Leave Act. It guarantees you up to a maximum of 12 weeks of unpaid job-protected leave. So you're getting your benefits, but you're not getting your pay, but you've got job security. So when you return from family medical leave, if you return within the prescribed time, you have to be returned to your old job or an equivalent job. And the Family Medical Leave Act is a law that we touch on, but we're not specialists in it. We're basically ADA and accommodations. So if someone has a problem with the Family Medical Leave Act, if you feel like you've been denied that by your employer or you have some complaint, you would contact the U.S. Department of Labor. They have a special branch called the Wage and Hour Division. And you can call them and register your questions with them or if you have a complaint. The Wage and Hour Division of the U.S. Department of Labor can be reached at 866-487-9243. I want to talk about the rights of the individuals, meaning employees, and the responsibilities of the employer. The rights of the individual kind of falls this way, and there's no set number of rights or anything like that. It basically says that if you meet the definition of disability under the ADA and you let your employer know that you need an accommodation, the employer is expected to make a good faith effort and provide the accommodation unless doing so would result in an undue hardship for the employer. A good faith effort means that the employer is going to use some kind of method or process to look at what you've asked for as an accommodation. And then, as I said, they're expected to give it to you unless it would cause them an undue hardship. Undue hardship is defined as being either too costly, too disruptive, too extensive, or too substantial, or that it requires a fundamental change in the way that they operate their business. So an employer can turn your request down for an accommodation if it's going to cause an undue hardship for them. The agency that enforces the Americans with Disabilities Act is the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They're a federal entity, and they enforce other civil rights laws besides the ADA. Their basic number is 800-669-4000. Now, I've kind of included the responsibilities of the employer along with what I was just saying as the rights of the individual. So the employer can turn you down if it's going to cause an undue hardship. They also can choose which accommodation they might want to provide. So if you ask for something specific and the employer determines that they can't provide it, they could offer you an alternative to what you've asked for if the alternative is going to be effective. So if you ask for an accommodation to, let's say, reduce your hours, they could in fact say, instead of reducing your hours, we're going to let you change your hours, or we're going to let you do some of your work from home, or there'll be some other effective option that they're offering you. Employers don't have to provide personal use items. So if someone asks for something like a wheelchair or a scooter or hearing aids, unless that could be shown that those devices would be needed at work to perform the essential functions of the job, the employer doesn't have to do that. So they're not going to have to pay for an artificial limb or hearing aids or a wheelchair or a scooter if you need it away from work as well as at work. If you only need it at work, then the case could be made that it's work-related. And employers don't have to make an accommodation for an individual who is not otherwise qualified for a position. Employers don't have to remove essential functions. They don't have to create jobs, and they don't have to lower production standards. Now, an important thing about the ADA, when an employee knows that they need an accommodation, either because they've recognized it themselves or someone on board has pointed out some problems, that's when we say disclose. Otherwise, you have no obligation under the ADA to disclose your condition to a prospective employer or to an employer that you're already working for until you need an accommodation. So if you apply for a job, there's not supposed to be what we refer to as illegal questions. They're not supposed to say something like, have you filed a worker comp claim in the last year? Have you been hospitalized recently? So you wouldn't have to answer those questions, and they're not supposed to be posed in the first place, but you wouldn't have to answer those questions because if you answered them and it was positive, that would be an indirect disclosure of your disability. So when people say, when do I disclose? I say, disclose when you know you need an accommodation. It could happen when you're being interviewed for the job and you review the job description. It might be after you actually start the job. Some people don't know they need an accommodation until they actually begin the job, and then they see that they're having problems. So you disclose when you know you need an accommodation, but you have no obligation to do so before that. And by the way, your medical information that you share with your employer has to be kept confidential. And any information that you provide, this written or in print or some other form, it cannot be placed in your regular personnel file. It's supposed to be separate from the personnel file in a cabinet that's locked so that the average employee won't be able to just go in and pull open a drawer and read about your information. So that information is very confidential. You disclose when you ask for job accommodations. You disclose if you're wanting to receive benefits or privileges of employment or to explain some unusual circumstance that someone might have noted but didn't realize it was based on your medical condition. Now, we suggest the way to disclose is to simply let your employer know that you need some kind of a change or adjustment or modification of your work because it's related to a medical condition. You can use plain everyday English. You don't even have to mention the Americans with Disabilities Act. You don't have to use the phrase reasonable accommodation. You just have to let them know that you need some help because of a disability. We do like the idea of putting your request in a letter, although you don't have to. We also like the idea of mentioning the ADA and calling what you want a reasonable accommodation. But again, you don't have to. I like to have the request in some written form so that you have a documentation that you did, in fact, ask for an accommodation. Also, if you've spoken with us or used the information on our website about what goes in a letter, when the employer reads that letter, they're going to probably recognize that you have gotten some assistance from someone, you've talked to an agency, you've done your homework. In other words, you know something about your rights. So they might take a closer look at what you're asking for if they think that you are aware of the ADA and what your rights are. As I said, you can do it verbally, but I actually prefer it in writing, and so do many of the JAN consultants. You would probably go to your HR rep, because because they're the ones, the human resources, they're the ones who typically handle reasonable accommodation requests. You could go to your supervisor or department head, but basically somebody in charge, somebody that's going to be able to make the decision that, yes, they can provide the accommodation, or no, they can't. And typically, as I said, that's handled by your human resources person. I want to talk about some accommodations under the ADA. We have split this up into, especially thinking about MS, the accommodations may be needed for limitations associated with fine motor activities, gross motor, vision, fatigue, temperature sensitivity, or certain cognitive impairments that the person with MS has. So we break it down into these kinds of areas. And for the fine motor, there's a lot of different things. It's going to depend. When I am asked to provide a specific accommodation suggestion, what I want to know more than anything else is, what is it the person is exactly having a problem doing? Is it holding on to a pen or pencil? Is it using a computer keyboard or a mouse? Is it sitting in a chair all day? Is it lifting things? Is it climbing? So once I've been able to identify the work-related problem, then I'm more able to be able to give some specific accommodation suggestions. Regarding the fine motor, there's all kinds of ergonomic equipment out there. There's writing aids, there's page turners, book holders, recorders, note takers, all kinds of products that have ergonomic designs. And, of course, alternative computer and telephone access, which today everybody uses computers, and a large percentage of my calls are about computer access. Somebody's not able to use the standard mouse, or someone can't use the standard computer keyboard. So we try to come up with some products that would help with that. When it comes to gross motor, we're talking about things like making the building accessible, providing parking, making sure that the entrance is accessible, the restroom, the break areas, and what I refer to as common use areas. So an employer may need to provide parking, put in a grab bar, may have to consider an automatic door opener, various changes at the physical site itself. Also, we get a lot of calls involving workstations and seating. So there are a lot of ways that you can adjust a workstation, or a chair for that matter, to make it accessible. You can adjust the desk height. You can move the equipment around, put it within reach, make sure that the office equipment is accessible, and, of course, providing a good chair. And we feel that if you're not able to really go in and make a workstation or the workspace itself completely ergonomic, you want to start with a good chair so that the person is able to be able to access what's on their desktop. So getting a good chair is important. And really, there are so many chairs out there and so many manufacturers of chairs. I usually say, if you can go to some place like an office supply place or some other store that has office equipment, meaning workstations and chairs, go in and try some of them out. It's just like buying a mattress for your bed. You don't usually buy a mattress without trying it out, laying down on it. So you would do the same thing with a chair, because there are so many chairs and so many different ways that you can actually modify a chair. Now, the vision impairments are sometimes associated with MS, and if someone's having trouble reading print, not on the computer, but paper, let's say, you could use any number of magnifiers. There are hand magnifiers that you hold. There are stand magnifiers that stand up, and you can arrange them so that you can place them over whatever you're trying to read. If you're having difficulty reading from your computer screen, there's software that is called screen magnification software, where it magnifies everything on the screen and gives you the option of magnifying up to about 30 times. You also would might want some proper lighting, probably on your desk. A lot of people have adverse reactions to overhead lights, especially fluorescent lights. So many times we recommend having task lighting, which is simply a lamp on your desk that you would be able to focus right on your keyboard or on your paper that you're reading or on your phone or whatever. So there's a lot of products for that. We also think that, in general, allowing rest breaks is a good idea as a possible accommodation, too. And this leads into one of the primary symptoms of MS, which is fatigue, muscle weakness. You want to try to reduce or eliminate physical exertion and stress on the job. You want to, as an employer, allow people to have periodic rest breaks, meaning rest breaks as they need them, to allow maybe a flexible schedule or leave time, to allow work from home, to allow someone to have a scooter or other mobility aid, and again, to look at proper ergonomic workstation design. The thing that I've seen that's most effective for dealing with fatigue as an accommodation is to reduce the modify the schedule. Usually that means that the individual wants to work fewer hours per day, or maybe fewer days per week, or maybe even go down to part-time. But you have to be careful going into part-time. You might lose your benefits, and that could be a problem. Because if you have a long-term degenerative condition, your benefits are very, very important. Temperature sensitivity is something else that folks with MS often experience. Mainly heat. So we suggest that the employer consider keeping the thermostat at an appropriate level. There are also clothing and cool vests that you can use that help you keep cool. Even working in a hot environment, people can use the cooling clothing or the vest. And there's even hard hat liners and scarves and things like that that can help you keep cool while you're working. And certainly you don't want to work outside in the hot weather if you can, you know, somehow avoid that. We also think that when the temperature sensitivity issue becomes apparent, maybe some flexible scheduling and leave time would be appropriate. Again, maybe working from home during very cold weather or very hot weather could be another consideration as an accommodation. The cognitive limitations associated with MS are varied. Sometimes people have difficulty with memory. Sometimes people have trouble making decisions, managing their time properly, concentrating on the job. So there's quite a few accommodation suggestions that we make. And by the way, when I'm talking about these suggestions, they're just some of the most common. There can be any number of other accommodation suggestions that we might make, and certainly we try to be creative with coming up with something that's going to be effective. But regarding the cognitive, we're strong believers in people having written job instructions rather than someone coming up and simply telling it to you. If you have a memory problem, then you may not remember what the people said. If you have a cognition issue where you're not taking in the information correctly, then if you're able to get it in a written form rather than verbal, you're going to be able to refer back to it as often as you need to and be able to be sure that you're on the right track. We also think that prioritizing your assignments is something that's good to do. Flexible work hours, rest breaks again. There are memory aids that people can use. You can minimize distractions in the workplace. We get a lot of calls from people who say there's a lot of noise in our office. People are talking. There's office machines with auditory signals going off all the time. So there are a lot of ways that you can deal with minimizing the distractions as well, including environmental sound machines and erecting a barrier, a sound barrier between you and the rest of the space. Noise-canceling headsets can be worn. So those are some easy ways to minimize distractions. We also like for people to have a lot of structure when they're having cognitive problems. The more structure you have, the better. We also like closer supervision, and I say timely supervision. If an employer gives you an assignment, you kind of want the employer to come in, or someone come in, and review what you've started before you finish it. You don't want to spend a long time or the whole day working on something and later find out that you misunderstood what you were supposed to do, maybe going in the wrong direction. So having closer supervision and timely supervision can be very helpful. We've got some situations and solutions that I want to go over a few of these. These are some actual examples of problems that people have reported to us and our suggestions for that. And by the way, for those of you who are privy to the PowerPoint presentation that I sent Christina, you probably have already noticed that I'm not sticking to it. I'm moving around a lot. I'm trying to make it more specific to the needs of my audience. And I know that you guys wanted to know a lot about the ADA and the Family Medical Leave Act, so I spent a little more time on that than I ordinarily would. And I will, before I go to the situations and solutions with the real examples, let me just mention the most common accommodations for anyone. First, there could be equipment. That could be software, it could be furniture, it could be tools, any number of products. Then there can be something called job restructuring. This is when the employee says, I can do most of the job, but I can't do one or two things. If those one or two things that you're having trouble doing are considered to be marginal functions of the job, not essential, you can ask your employer to either remove that job requirement or reallocate it to someone else when it needs to be done. The catch is, an employer doesn't have to remove or reallocate work duties that are essential. They only have to consider that for marginal functions. However, if the employer wants to remove an essential function, they're not going to be punished for doing so. So the employer can remove it. They simply don't have to. Modified schedules, I touched on that a little bit. This is a very common accommodation. And as I said, it could be reduced hours, reduced days, or even part-time. And also sometimes people are tardy to work and maybe they have a tendency to be tardy. If it becomes an issue, then a flexible startup would be a possible accommodation. And that would be on an as-needed basis. It wouldn't necessarily be every day, but when you're very symptomatic and you know that you're moving slower, having the flexible startup is a good way to deal with that because you call in and you say, this is a day where I need to come in later. I will be in, but I'm not going to be in at 8. I'll be in more like 8:30. So the employer is supposed to consider giving you a modified schedule in any of these different manifestations that I mentioned. The last thing that an employer typically has to look at is called reassignment. This is when you can't do your job or you can't be effectively accommodated to do the job. So you ask the employer for a different job as an accommodation. Three things you have to keep in mind when you're going to ask for a different job as an accommodation. Number one, the employer only has to consider positions that are open or soon to be open. This means they don't have to create a job just for you. It also means that they don't have to give you someone else's job. However, they can if they want to. They just don't have to. So if you're going to ask for another job, there has to be one that's open or soon to be open. It has to be something you're already qualified to do. And the third aspect of reassignment is that the employer is supposed to try to give you something that is equivalent in duty and salary to what you're already doing and making. However, if the only job they have is something quite different and or it pays less, they would be within their rights to offer you that lower paid position. There's also telework, which I mentioned earlier. And then, of course, these are just the basic accommodations, which could include an interpreter or a reader, an aide. So there are different ways of dealing with accommodations. Again, it's equipment, job restructuring, modified schedules, reassignment, telework, and then some other accommodations like providing readers or a scribe. Scribe is someone who actually does a handwriting for someone or marks test or something like that. So now I'm going to spend a couple of minutes going over some of the real life calls that we've gotten where the person explains to us the problem they're having, and then we give them a suggestion of how they might be able to deal with that issue. First example is a retail employee who was having concentration and memory issues due to MS, who often forgot the closing and cash-out procedures, which resulted in missing printouts of the daily sale reports. The accommodation was for the employer to create a numbered checklist that identified each step for proper closing procedures and identified which reports to run from the cash registers. These accommodations benefited all employees as well. Another example is an employee who had cognitive issues and depression as a result of MS and was having difficulties working in a busy central banking office. He needed to manage a large staff of workers, provide customer service, and oversee the daily office management. The accommodation was that he requested and received a reassignment to a smaller and less busy branch office. The employee maintained his salary and the responsibilities of his leadership role. Another example is an administrative assistant in a social service agency had multiple sclerosis. Her duties included typing, word processing, filing, and answering the phone. She had difficulty with concentration and short-term memory. We recommended including assistance in organizing her work and a dual headset for a telephone that allowed her to listen to the music when not talking on the phone. This accommodation minimized distractions, increased concentration, and relaxed the employee. Also, recorded meetings were held with the supervisor once a week to discuss the workplace issues. And when I said listening to music, music is one form of a method that you can use to cut down on distractions. There are also environmental sound machines that will play a babbling brook, the ocean, a tropical rain, those kinds of things. Somehow they cut back on distractions. You may have heard of white noise, a similar kind of thing. Another real-life example is an office manager with MS was unable to meet crucial deadlines. He had difficulty maintaining his concentration and staying focused when trying to complete the assignments. The accommodations were implemented that allowed him to organize his time by scheduling off periods during the week where he could work without interruption. He was also provided a flexible schedule that gave him more time for counseling and medical appointments, and the supervisor also provided information about the company employee assistance program, where he could get some counseling and some help from that department. Another example is an attorney with MS was going through a period of exacerbation of her symptoms and found it difficult to complete her regular workload. Her employer transferred several of the marginal functions of her job to another employee until the symptoms remitted. This is what I described earlier as job restructuring. This allowed the employee to use her reduced levels of energy, memory, and concentration to complete the essential functions of the job. A daycare worker requested that she be allowed to change her hours from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. to 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. because her cognition functioning was sharper later in the morning. This is an example of either coming in later as needed or reducing your schedule so that you have different hours. You're working the same number of hours, just different ones. Instead of working 7 to 3, she wanted to work 10 to 6. And that was allowed. They still had adequate staffing at the start of the morning, so the employer granted the accommodation. There are several ways that you can utilize our service at the Job Accommodation Network. Certainly, you can give us a call. We really like live calls where we're talking to people, where there's a give and take. We have a toll-free number. And by the way, we're open from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern. Our phone number is 800-526-7238. You can also go on our website, and I'll tell you, it is an excellent website. It's also very massive. So a lot of people call us and say, I'm on your website, but I can't find a certain thing that I'm looking for. So we can walk you through that. Our web address, and you don't type in www, simply type askjan.org, askjan.org. Again, we're open from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern. We also, I want you to know that we have, our consultants are split into four various teams. One is the motor team, which I'm a member of. The others, we have a cognitive neurological team. They deal with, obviously, cognitive issues. They talk to people that have head injuries, brain tumors, and psychiatric conditions. We also have a sensory team that deals primarily with vision and hearing. They also deal with speech issues. And we also have Small Business Service Self-Employment Program that helps people with disabilities try to determine how they can start up something from home. And a lot of people with MS like to work from home for various reasons. So we have the four teams. So we've got people that can deal with various symptoms associated with MS, and certainly with people that have a distinct diagnosis involving any of these various team categories. At this point, I am finished with my presentation, and I'm going to turn it back over to Christina. And I hope that you will use our service in the future. Again, give us a call. 1-800-526-7234, or visit us at askjan.org.
Thank you very much, Eddie. Lots of valuable information there. Claire, we're now ready to turn it over to question and answer time.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, to ask a question at this time, please press the number one key on your phone now. Our first question will come from Jill. Please go ahead, Jill.
Yes, good evening. Let me take you off speaker. I think that would probably work better. I recently was laid off from a position, they said financial. Prior to that, I was my only symptom of MS was dizziness, was the vertigo, to the point that I had to be retrained in walking. My office was moved to a place where it was heavy traveled, next to a corridor, next to a elevator, and right next to a door with no door to the office. And I do confidential counseling. I requested accommodation and had three doctor's letters and was ignored for over a year. When I was laid off, I was told that I had to sign off that I would not sue the hospital for that for any issues. Would I have had a claim, and should I keep this in mind for any future disability? Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. You had a reason to feel like you were being discriminated against. First of all, when you request an accommodation, the ADA doesn't refer to a specific time, but it says simply, and this is very vague language, and we've talked to the EEOC a number of times about it, but the ADA says an employer should respond in a, quote, reasonable amount of time. Now, we here think that a month would be about as long as an employer should take to respond to the accommodation request. The EEOC has said it may take a little bit longer depending on the nature of the request and how difficult it might be for the employer to provide it or to find the appropriate product or whatever. But ignoring you is definitely a no-no. the employer is supposed to make a good faith effort, which, as I said earlier, means they're actually supposed to use some method or process to look at what you've asked for. Part of that process we refer to as the interactive process, which means you sit down with your employer and you discuss your needs. And the employer and you go back and forth over your issues, and you're included in it. The absence of the interactive process goes against the intent of the ADA. It's not something that must be done, but is something that is highly encouraged. And even in the ADA, it says that the employer should include the employee in any discussion about the need to improve your ability to do your work, i.e., receiving a reasonable accommodation. So, yes, them ignoring you for a year, absolutely wrong. The problem is you can't wait a year. The EEOC has a deadline for filing complaints. It's 180 days, 6 months. Now, there are state human rights commissions that also look at ADA discrimination issues, and some of those agencies have a 300-day limit. But basically, the EEOC is the entity that most people go to. It's 180 days. So I say to people, if you haven't heard back in a month or so, revisit the situation. Contact whoever you made the request of. If it was the HR, go back to the HR and simply say, you know, I made this request. It's been X number of days or weeks. I haven't heard anything. Can you give me an update on the status of my request? And, of course, this is something the EEOC would look at, but you don't want to wait more than 180 days.
Our next question will come from Kathy. Please go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. I have two questions. The first is for reassignment accommodations. If you ask for a reassignment, but then what you're offered is not acceptable to you, either you don't feel it is a real accommodation for you, it's less pay, something like that, but you've already identified that you're struggling with the job you're in, can your employer kind of force you out of your current position because you identified already that you sort of can't do it? And then the second question is, that's not an issue for me personally, but for someone I know, I work with. I'm a federal employee, and so we have this thing called 508 compliance for web-based materials. But 508 compliance really isn't enough for a lot of us in terms of making it truly accessible. And so do you have any suggestions or comments to move for an accommodation to enhance beyond 508 compliance?
Not something specific with a 508, but 508 is all about technology, and this is something that we know about. So, you know, we can help you identify technology that might be more suitable or more usable by you compared to something that the government's offering. With us, everything is case by case. Of course, the ADA is case by case. But when we look at accommodation situations, it's on a case by case basis. I'm not always going to say the exact same thing to someone who might have the exact job or exact disability that someone else has. Because as you all know, everybody with MS doesn't experience the same symptoms. They don't experience the same degree of symptoms. So someone might have a little bit of fatigue, someone else might have overwhelming fatigue. So it's always case by case. But one of the things that we're proud of is that we are able to identify technology. So when it comes to 508 itself, we don't really deal with that issue too much, but we certainly look at technology all day long. Regarding the reassignment, if you're asking for a reassignment, you're more or less saying that you're not able to do your current job. So you want to first try to get accommodated some other way. As I said earlier, reassignment is the last thing that an employer is expected to look at because they're expected to try to accommodate the current job. But let's say They've tried some accommodations and they didn't work out. At some point, the employer gets to draw a line in the sand and say, these aren't working. We've tried these accommodations. They're not being effective. Do you have any other ideas? And you say, well, there might be another job that I can do that would be more appropriate for me and that I could handle. That would be the accommodation itself. So the bottom line is, an employee with a disability must perform the essential functions of the job with or without accommodation. So if you're not able to do the job the way it is now, certainly you can ask for an accommodation in hopes that that accommodation will be effective and you will be able to perform the essential functions of the job. So you've got to be able to do your job in spite of having a disability. The difference is you get to ask for an accommodation. And again, the accommodation for reassignment, you have to start off, do they have something? Employers sometimes are very willing to create a job. And under certain circumstances with union agreements, people are able to bump people. But outside of that context, employers don't have to create jobs and they don't have to bump someone to give you their job. So you look at the current positions that a person's able to do. You should not turn down an accommodation of reassignment simply because the money is less. Because if you turn down an accommodation that would be effective, you may no longer be a qualified person with a disability because you're not able to do the job. So if you're going to ask for an accommodation, be prepared to accept it. And nobody wants to make less money. And most people don't want to change their job duties that much and go to something different. But it does happen. And I had a school teacher tell me one time, she had MS. She said, I know I can no longer do the job. They've accommodated me. It's still not working. But they've got an office position that I feel confident that I could do. And even though it's not being a teacher, and even though the money's going to be a lot less, I want to stay in the system. I like being around children. I like doing this kind of work. So I'm going to accept the office position. But you can be forced out if you're not able to do the job, and the employer's already tried accommodations and it hasn't worked. But just because an employer has provided one or two accommodations doesn't mean that that's the end of it. They may have to consider some more. But there is a point where it's not working. You don't have to keep on providing accommodations.
Our next question will come from Amanda. Please go ahead, Amanda.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I work at a really large company, and every year they send out an email invite for people to voluntarily disclose either veteran status or disability status. I just wondered, would there be any benefit to me doing that before it was actually necessary for me to ask for an accommodation?
The only time that we get this issue is when an employer is having to show that they've met certain requirements. For instance, under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, you're probably all familiar with having heard the expression affirmative action. Well, federal entities have to have so many people on board that meet the affirmative action requirements. It could be based on race, gender, disability. So if they're needing to show that they have met their quotas, more or less, they can have a voluntary disclosure form sent around, but it has to be voluntary. They cannot require you to fill out the form. It's strictly you wanting to disclose to help them out. And that information has to be kept confidential. It could only be shared with whatever entity is requiring them to prove that they've met the guidelines. And like I said, it's often affirmative action.
Our next question will come from Ellen. Please go ahead, Ellen.
Hi. I have a couple of things. I filled out an application for Stop and Shop here in Arlington. And on their application online, it asked if you received SSI or SSDI in the last 60 months or 6 months or something like that. And they're not allowed to ask that?
Absolutely not.
Well, they do. It's on their website.
Yeah, I know. We get calls every day where people have said, you know, I went out and I went to 7 different prospective employers. I filled out their forms, and every one of them had illegal questions. You don't have to answer a question that is going to show that you might have a disability if you answer that question. I use the example of saying, have you been in a hospital? Have you been hospitalized? If you said yes, that could very likely show that you have a disability. Have you filed a worker comp claim recently? That could also tip off that you have a disability. So you don't have to disclose anything that would show that you might have a disability until the employer or prospective employer has given you a conditional job offer. So once they've said, we're going to hire you if your references check out, or if you pass the required physical that everybody has to have, or something like that, then once the conditional offer's been made, they can ask you any number of things. They can even have you fill out a health questionnaire. They can have you see the doctor for a physical examination, but only if everybody who applies for that position is required to do the same thing. And even if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, this person has whatever the condition is, and here are the restrictions, the employer cannot rescind or withdraw the job offer simply because they learned that you have MS. Instead, they're supposed to consider, are there any accommodations that this person would need in order for them to be able to perform the essential functions of the job? So even if you didn't tell them you have MS and they discover it, they're not supposed to withdraw the job offer. Instead, they're supposed to consider accommodations that would help you do whatever functions might be problematic. But asking about Social Security, especially SSDI, absolutely not. They cannot pose that question.
Hi, this is Christina. We're actually almost out of time, so I wanted to be sure to give our contact information before we do the poll-in. So if anybody still has questions, they can feel free to contact myself, Steve Nissen, or Barbara McKeon. My email address is Christina.Forster, which is christina.forster@NMSS. As in National Multiple Sclerosis Society.org. The telephone number is 215-271-1500. And Steve, if you'd like to give your contact information.
Sure. It can be reached by phone at 202-296-5363 or by email at steve.nissen. It's N as in Nancy, ISSEN at NMSS.org. Barbara?
Yeah, and this is Barbara. My contact information for those of you in New York and the Northeast is 212-453-3218, and the email is B as in Barbara McKeon, M-C-K-E-O-N, so that's B McKeon at msnyc.org.
And, thank you, Andy.
Yeah, this is Eddie. I would prefer people to send their email request to the agency based on who's available at certain times of the day. I'm not always available. We all get various times off where we're doing other activities. So if you simply direct your email to askjan.org, it will be sent to the appropriate person.
Thank you, and thank you again, Eddie, for your presentation tonight, and thank you, everybody, for being on the call, and if you could stay on for just a couple more minutes, we have 6 polling questions that I will be asking. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this will now begin your polling session. Our first question tonight, are you currently working? Please press the number 1 for yes or 2 for no. Again, are you currently working? Please press the number 1 for yes or number 2 for no. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. polling session for this question has now concluded. Please hold while we prepare for our next question. Okay, and our second question tonight, how would you rate the speakers? Please press the number 1 for excellent, the number 2 for good, the number 3 for fair, or the number 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the speakers? Please press the number 1 for excellent, the number 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 1 for 4 for poor. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. Polling for this question has closed. Please hold while we prepare for our next question. Okay, our next question tonight. How would you rate the content of the program? Please press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. Again, how would you rate the content of the program? Please press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. Okay, and we have stopped the polling for this question. Please hold while we prepare for our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I learned one new thing about the Americans with Disabilities Act. Please press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for agree somewhat, 4 for disagree, or 5 for strongly disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I learned one new thing about the Americans with Disabilities Act. 1, strongly agree, 2, agree, 3, agree somewhat, 4 for disagree, 5 for strongly disagree. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. Okay, and the polling has closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare for our next question. And our next question, as a result of this teleconference, I gained clarification of my rights and responsibilities as a person with a disability in the workplace. 1, for strongly agree, 2, for agree, 3, for agree somewhat, 4, for disagree, 5, for strongly disagree. As a result of this teleconference, I gained clarification of my rights and responsibilities as a person with a disability in the workplace. That is 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for somewhat agree, 4 for disagree, and 5 for strongly disagree. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. Polling is now stopped for this question. Please hold while we prepare for our last question. And our final question this evening. As a result of this teleconference, I became more familiar with key employment laws and how I can use them to help me make a decision about my employment. Please press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for agree somewhat, 4 for disagree, or 5 for strongly disagree. Again, as a result of this teleconference, I became more familiar with key employment laws and how I can use them to help me make a decision about my employment. Please press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for agree somewhat, 4 for disagree, or 5 for strongly disagree. Please hold while we allow the results to come in. And ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your presentation tonight. You may all disconnect at this time.